got my dice and I got my friends. We're going on a quiz that never ends. You know when there is trouble abound, me and my crew will always be around. Ladies and gentlemen, I am the Lone Gunman, and it's time for the Gamers Haven Podcast with your hosts, Ethan, Jeremy, and Nathan.
Welcome back to the Gamers Haven Podcast. I am one of your intrepid hosts, Ethan. I'm here with, of course, Nathan and Jeremy.
Bonjour, comment ça va?
See, there we go. And Nathan is French again.
Oui.
Jeremy, what nationality are you today?
Canuck.
You're a Canuck?
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Eh?
Eh.
Alrighty.
Which yeah, on NPR, I heard this wonderful thing about that word where Canadians have accepted it as their own, and it's not derogatory, so it's perfectly okay.
Well, yeah, the Vancouver hockey team is called the Canucks. It's the Justice City Canucks.
And
now,
there's actually Canucks like all over the world, it turns out.
Uh-huh.
So you don't even have to be Canadian. So
yeah.
I have to give them props.
Make it their own. That's good.
It their own. And actually, there was Johnny Canuck was the same as our Uncle Sam.
Oh, cool.
I did not know that. One of the hockey players actually has Johnny Canuck's face painted on his hockey mask.
Nice.
And
don't mess with these Canadians.
And what was awesome is he was very wholesome and very polite, just like Canadians.
Awesome.
Yeah, Canadians are really, really nice people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, except for the mean ones.
The only really angry one I've seen is Mike Holmes, and he's a quote-unquote angry Canadian.
Yeah.
He still says A.
Well, I think there probably are mean ones, but
oh, yeah.
It's just like, you know, there's, you know, I was trying to think of something to compare it to, but I really can't right now. So,
That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. Well, you know, here we are sitting, we are now recording episode, I believe we're on episode 83.
83
episodes.
That was 76.
Yes. How was 76?
I thought it was 76.
No, we're on like 83 now, dude.
Hells yeah.
We're probably talking to Jeremy from the past or something now. Oh, well. Gosh. You know, CantCon, as of the recording, we're recording on June 3rd, 2011. CantCon's a little over a month away.
X-Men First Class comes out tonight.
In fact, the next episode that you will be hearing will be our CantCon episode in general. So we'll be talking all about what's going on at CantCon and you know, fulfilling a few requirements for the Kickstarter that we did. So that'll be happening next time. But this time we're talking, we're gonna get all religious on you and talk about religion in your game. So I think should be kind of interesting because that's actually kind of a cool concept in the game. So, you know, depending on the game you're playing, really. I don't know, as far as you guys, I've been enjoying some movies this summer, taking it easy as much as I can. So that's about it, really. We bought an ice cream maker today.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I have to have two root canals done next Wednesday.
Sweet.
That's not as fun as ice cream makers.
No, not nearly as fun.
No, not fun, but it's definitely a necessity.
Yes, definitely a necessity.
Were they having a special?
Two for one?
No, it's just the two teeth need to be replaced because they're causing pain. So.
Oh, all right. We could sock you in the jaw really hard if that would help.
No, I'd like to keep the teeth.
Oh, okay.
Got which it. Is why I opted
fine,
for
Nathan,
the more expensive
be all selfish.
Root canal
you want to keep
the
teeth
extracting.
Man. Yeah.
I mean, I could have gone for the cheaper package, which was tooth extraction.
Right. Yeah.
I kind of want to keep my teeth.
Uh-huh.
So.
All righty. Well, I mean, what else? Has been going on with us. I mean, that's my sort of thing. You got teeth, you got root canals going on, Jeremy. Any news on your front?
Well, I'll rant a little bit later.
Sure. And, well, you're getting tomorrow. Your new D&D game starts up, Thunder Rift, right?
I am going to run Thunder Rift for a little while, a little small group for a little while, and see
cool.
how that goes. So that should be interesting.
So that's what I do next. I guess that's something I could talk about on my front. Next Monday, I start a new job.
Hey, yes, yes. We have talked about that on the show before, that Nathan was looking for employment.
Yeah.
And looking.
And I finally gave up, and then I started getting calls back. And one of the companies that I really enjoy, I really, really liked, the company, called me back for a second interview. And then the next week, they offered me a position. They offered me, what was it, 2 weeks ago now?
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right, yeah.
2 weeks ago this coming Monday, they called me back and offered me the job. And so I took it because it's a cool company.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
Congratulations.
It's going to be interesting.
All right. Well, we will be back right after this with our discussion on religion and games. And then later on, we're, of course, going to be doing our three-parter and then coming back at you with some random encounters. So stay tuned.
Hello? Is this thing on? What? You didn't think we were going to be gone that long, did you?
You've been listening to the Chronic Rift podcast.
With all new episodes beginning May 19th with our episode zero.
Each week we deliver news, reviews, and interviews while discussing the latest pop culture phenomena.
And don't forget the guest hosts for the in-review segments, Paul.
For bios, blogs, podcast archive, and general information, visit us on the web at chronicrift.com. The Chronic Rift is part of the Mevio Network, where you can listen to our podcast, subscribe to our iTunes, Zune, and RSS feeds.
That's May 19th at chronicrift.mevio.com.
For The Chronic Rift, this is Paul K. Bisson. The Chronic Rift is a Lucky Shot production.
I love it when he says that part.
This is the Vorpal Network.
All right. Well, we are back, and as we said in the intro, we're going to be talking a bit about religion in your game. This is something I think we touched on a few times here and there, but never really talked, you know, in full about it.
It's a very sensitive subject for some people.
Yeah. I think predominantly, of course, when you're talking religion in game, first thing that's going to come to mind is, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. You know, you got your clerics running around, and so really you have two different aspects of religion in your game is your made-up religions in-game, and then real-world religions in-game. So, one, obviously, the made-up religions, you have a lot more freedom. You don't really need to look at stepping on toes, whereas when you're looking at the real-world stuff, then you can start getting into a dangerous area where people can get offended a bit. So, we've all done some work in D&D and in establishing sort of religions that go on, some more so than others, granted. But you know, we got various clerical orders doing their thing and, you know, religions doing their thing. So what do you guys think about, you know, clerical orders, religions, that sort of thing? And how do you want to implement those in games?
Well, the generic cleric always bothered me because it's boring.
Sure.
Well, it's like I'm a cleric.
It's basically a
you're a cleric of
different,
what?
A different type of just a magic user type of thing.
Yeah.
Age, yeah.
So what do you follow? Well, I do clerical stuff.
And I hear the term cleric, and then I hear the term clerical stuff.
Like I'm taking dictation.
Yes, that's exactly right. I'm keeping track of your accounts. I'm doing clerical work.
So no, your clerical stuff is what? It's healing. So you're mm-hmm. a doctor?
Yeah.
Well, kind of.
Yeah, who pulls the warrior's head out of his ribcage when he insults the troll.
If mm-hmm. that's the case, then really a cleric could actually be, you could get rid of the title
mm-hmm.
and just take the healing magic and make it a different school
make it
of
instead
magic.
Of a cleric and instead of a holy man, it's a healer, a shaman.
You could even push it as far as just like there's necromancy and all the different schools of magic. You just have another.
Well, it's like Gold Moon in Dragonlance. You know, she just laid on hands and healed people, type of thing. And
mm-hmm.
Sure, later on she became.
But
a
she had faith in
woman.
Something.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing about Dungeons and Dragons is that the arcane magic doesn't heal. It's holy magic
it's,
and clerical
it's completely,
magic.
It's completely force of will. Arcane magic.
And even when they did make spells that repair damage, it was just repair. It was like
it
you
would
repaired,
either repair or it would take.
Yeah, or
it would
transfer
take something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
you could make it another
it's,
school
it's
of
like,
magic and just make.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like the laws of alchemy. You can't make something without
sure.
taking something in exchange.
The law of exchange.
I guess, from Full Metal Alchemist. Arcane magic and clerical magic, you know, the arcane magic, you probably want to think more scientifically about it as energy transference and that sort of
formulas,
transferring one form of energy to another, et cetera. But it's clerical magic, there's that unknown factor of we have this other being that's granting me power.
I get power from a greater source. Yeah, I've heard that one before.
but I mean, that's important because I think cultures have spiritual identities.
And for someone like me, that's a very, very hard thing for me to swallow because, you know, I'm pretty much as atheistic as you can get.
Sure.
And so it's like the whole idea that I can understand in a role-playing system because it adds specifically to the layout of the system of having a god granting powers or bestowing favor upon a specific person. But the whole problem I have with that stems all the way back to the whole you're one tiny person on the face of a vast planet that is one tiny person that worships this massive deity, and he's taking time out of his schedule to bestow upon you the ability.
That is one thing that always sort of got me, especially if you're running with early level characters of you have players and characters who assume that since they're a player character, they have more pull with their deity than other people. And so it's like, oh, we're in a hopeless situation. I'm going to sit and pray to my God for guidance and pray to my God for help and all this stuff. When it's like,
he doesn't answer.
As a GM, I sort of look and think, it's like, well, first of all, your first, second level, honestly, you haven't done anything to really, you know, make yourself shine above all the others, rise above everyone else. So I don't see why a deity would grant you special favor when it wouldn't do it to someone else. I mean, sure, you could say, well, there's this predetermined, they have a destiny, they have this, you know, the god has a purpose for them, that sort of thing. It's that sort of Deus Ex Machina thing that always drives me crazy, especially happens in D&D with the clerical stuff. It's like, well, I'm stumped and I'm going to go pray to my god and hope that the GM just sort of throws me a bone. Or does something to strike down the big nasty baddie that is coming at us. Because you don't want to get too entrenched in that, because if you do it a couple times and then you don't want the characters to become dependent on it.
It kind of, that's why when you have, I look at it a little bit differently, because it depends on the deity. And it also depends on what you've built. And it depends on what is, and you really kind of have to think about what is important to the deity.
Mm-hmm.
We are assuming that a god is almighty, all-knowing, just mostly because of our
preconceived
culture.
Notions.
But
right.
We have to kind of, when you're building a fantasy world, you need to stop and go, now, wait a second.
The
barbarian tribe worships possibly the spirit of that lake.
Sort of like in Conan the Barbarian. He's always praying to Crom, but Crom doesn't do anything.
At the end, he's like,
and if you don't help, then to hell with you.
But that could be many things.
Yeah.
That could be Crom's dead.
Right.
Crom doesn't care.
Or Crom
really doesn't
busy.
Exist.
And you can only put out this, well, that your God works in mysterious ways things so many times before people get fed up with that.
There's also... It really depends, because the spirit in the lake, if it's just a spirit that's always been there and it's not getting anything out of the deal, no matter if it's good, bad, or other, it's not going to really care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean there aren't rituals that can pull power from it.
Right.
It's not that it's necessarily noticing it. It's just, oh, whatever. Something's happening. Mm-hmm.
My argument was always, it's like, well, wasn't my God helping me out? Well, it's like, your God does help you out. You have spells.
But on the other side of things, if that small tribe, by being focused on, and this is where I think a deity of lesser power is going to pay much more attention to an individual, depending on what they believe in things, than one who's more powerful. Because if that one little spirit is getting something out of the worship, if in your world worship builds something for that entity, whether it's just political power within their realm, whether it's actual mental power, whatever it is, that's very important. You'd be surprised how the littlest thing, when it brings you something, if somebody brings you a dollar bill, and you're like, oh, well, it's just a dollar bill. yes, but I just gave you a dollar bill.
Mm-hmm.
And if I take another dollar bill because somebody else gives you a dollar, I mean, that all adds up. Well, if you take the worship as the same way.
Sure.
So if they're getting something out of it and that group is being threatened, well, the spirit is going to try to help. Now, there may be things that the spirit either can't do or won't do.
So this sounds like it's individual versus group type of thing.
It could be.
Is that
a demigod, if we use that phrase, may not have very many worshipers.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be why he's only a demigod versus a god.
Right.
But guess what? Maybe he is always just going to be a demigod, or maybe he wants to be more powerful.
Yeah.
And in this particular setting, you gain that power by worship.
And you want to, and you know, it's like you're also going off the assumption that
he's going to be more attentive to his followers because he wants to spread
the faith. Right, that a god. You're also going off the assumption that God gains power from his worshipers. You know,
you could do it,
but you could also do a mix. Yeah. I mean, there could be one of those things where I'm a greater god. Now, with worshipers, I gain more power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we understand that as a mortal? No.
Right.
But
I'd say, do we understand that as a player? No.
No, not necessarily. But that doesn't mean that that's not important.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, it depends on what is that god for. If it's a god of the family, oh yeah, that god's going to pay attention to individuals, maybe not all the time, but once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a god of something vast, it's going to take something vast for it to really notice.
Right.
And actually, later D&D did this quite well, where it says, if this affects this many creatures, then it will notice. I see nothing wrong with beseeching the deity, though at the same time, it's very, very rare. And I know in earlier ones when they actually said, hey, let's do a dice roll, it was like 1%.
Right.
They made it 1%. Because if there's no chance, then it's kind of like, well, okay. Because this is a mutual thing. Especially as a cleric. Because as a cleric or as a priest, you are going out. You are the spokesperson. Because for whatever reason, that god cannot come down or should not. Maybe if they enter the world, they destroy it or whatever. They are the spokesperson. But you're right. They also get powers. And they get powers through prayer. But part of that could just come from the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you can get churches like where the church does something that's not really what the god necessarily would think about. But they're still getting power.
That's definitely something to think about is, you know, God and church, two different things.
And that doesn't mean that the God doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the rituals are just part of it. And also, you kind of need to look at it as on earth, it is in heaven, is kind of a neat way of looking at it. Not making it so that it's always like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to kind of make things reflect where maybe there's a different personality of a deity. Maybe another deity has been born because now you have this rigid rigid church with ceremonies and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so one aspect of the deity is stern, while the other aspect of the deity is loving.
And you do that with your Andradia thing, is you have she has multiple aspects and different churches on
those. And the church is different. Now, also, if you throw in powerful angels, saints, things like that,
they can be worshipped too.
And this is if you're making deities not they know a lot.
Mm-hmm. And when we're talking D&D too, I mean, comparing it to real world is, I mean, you have, just look around you. I mean, there's so many different churches out there. I mean, there's so many different denominations. I mean, it's insane, you know.
Well, right.
There's tons of stuff out there. But if you're talking about a D&D world or a world where the gods really do exist, there is actual definitive magic coming from the gods, then that's something you really have to think about.
You can't just say it's nothing, because then your world loses something.
Right.
Now, it's perfectly okay to say...
Well, it's because there's this palpable thing. I mean, here, in the real world, you have to go on faith. But in D&D, or really in any game where you right. have this clerical magic going on, is there is a tangible thing. You can right. see... It's like, yes, I know God exists because I just saw that cleric do this thing.
Now, you may not necessarily know that when I die, mm-hmm. if I do not follow these things, I could say, hey, it's cool that this cleric heals me. But you know what? I don't really want to donate anything to that god.
Right.
Well, that's fine and dandy until it turns out that god is the god that protects your soul on the journey from your dead corpse mm-hmm. into the afterlife, and you didn't pay him, so now he just dumps you on the side of the road and you become a banshee.
Or the whole, you know, you disrespect the god of the road, and then you
yeah.
never make it to where you're going.
You just keep going.
Well, yeah, I always love that concept. I think you came up with it ultimately.
Yeah,
with Farlangen or the god of travels. Like, and there's you know, at the exits of cities, there's big, you know, communal
you put in a
pots.
Coppers.
Like, and it's like a copper piece or yeah, something like that. And it's just like, this is the your offering to the god of travel for a safe journey. And right. it's like, if you don't put one in, generally, it's not a bad deal. It might take an extra day or two yeah. to get there. Maybe.
Maybe the
but if you
dirty.
Steal from it.
If you steal from it, you may not ever get where you're going.
Right. If you steal from it, yeah. If you know, if you
blaspheme right. the
punch
god.
Punch one of their clerics
now,
in the nads and stuff them
now,
in there and
the
stab
time,
them a couple times, then you'll never make it where you go.
At the same time, certain deities are crazier and jealous. So, like for example, the goddess Shagira is evil and crazy, and if you say her name, she latches onto that.
Right.
She's like, awesome. I mean, she is actively listening.
Uh-huh.
Would that take a lot of
well,
your time?
That's something you want
yes.
you want to think about if you have a multi deity pantheon.
The thing is, the definition of a god is that they're omnipresent and omnipotent,
right.
which means that yeah, it takes a lot of time. But the thing is considering that by the definition of a god, they're everywhere, always,
to a point.
All seeing,
yeah.
all knowing.
But even if you don't make them that, I always like the concept of okay, one, you say their name, huh? Okay, man, that's kind of annoying. Two, you point
well,
something out
yeah.
to them.
It's like
and
saying
"master"
three
yeah.
times.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that if you're looking at deities, you know, I mean, when you have a pantheon with multiple deities, you really, if you want to make religion a big aspect of your game, you're going to want to sit down and sort of figure out, it's like, well, I have this deity, I have Kord, okay, I have a Palor, I have these gods. What would their churches be like? You know, right. what would their worshippers really? What are the worshippers of the sun would they ask for?
Right.
Well, they probably would be farmers. One aspect of them would
yeah.
they need sunlight to make their plants grow, obviously.
And they
without the sun, you get all depressed.
And they can have different you know? Aspects.
Yeah.
And they can have different. And just because. Okay, here's an example. Palor, god of the sun, great. In a side little Ravenloft-esque world,
Palor is bad.
Palor, well, in this case, Palor was not bad, but Palor was a champion who had brought light to them, but was defeated by darkness.
Sure.
And so this realm was forever in darkness.
You could also look at the world, whatever world you want to have. If you want to have a general fantasy game with the general D&D right. deities, and it's like, oh, there's Palor, the sun god. Well, a sun god in a regular fantasy world is going to be pretty easy to do. But if you have a sun god in, say, like a Dark Sun style campaign setting with this big nasty desert, it's going to be a different. It's
well,
going to be a different sort of story.
This is how. Like, okay, for example, in my world, the sun is a living, breathing
sure.
entity. Palor is a god
that's
of
the
sun.
Thing is that you need to get your brain around.
Right, but
it's
the
like
sun is an uncaring, to a point,
right.
entity. You can pray to the sun.
I really like the idea of having, you have your different races, that each race has their own creation myth. And
I like creation myths.
I think creation myths are really cool. And
even if they're not real, it doesn't matter.
The thing about running in a fantasy game, running in D&D, running anything like that, is you could make one of those, well, that's what really happened. Or you could say, well, here's what really happened, and then go from there and saying, okay, well, this is how this race interpreted
well,
this, how this
right.
race interpreted. And that's kind of fun stuff, because it's like, well, yeah, we do live in a universe where there's the sun and the Earth orbits around the sun. Well, You don't have to have that in a fantasy world. It's like, okay, no, the sun Earth orbits around Earth or, you know, whatever.
When you stare at the sun, solar, he is the sun, and he gives life.
Right.
But if you were to
Don't be afraid to make it fantastic.
If you were to somehow summon an avatar of him to the world, you are smurfed. Because that is solar plasma.
It would irradiate the entire planet.
Not even that thing. It's like, well, the sun, and then you immediately, because we live in a scientific world, we ought to say, well, the sun's big, ball of incandescent gas, all blah, 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 blah. Anyway.
Massive incandescent gas, the giant nuclear furnace.
But you're taking an entity
of... If you're in a fantasy world, that doesn't have to be the case. The sun could be a living ball of fire that lives in the sky, mere miles away from us.
Oh, yeah. It could be.
And it just travels the world.
And it doesn't even have to be the same in each plane of existence.
Right.
And that's the other thing you have to build. Your religion needs... Mm-hmm. And also, you have to take into account the players that want a place for your players to, for the characters to go when they die. That is strangely important to some players. You need to have that defined. It doesn't have to be super
defined. For God's
sake,
don't make it Ghostwalk.
Oh, God, don't make it Ghostwalk.
Only if you want the players to beat you to death.
You just want the players. At that point, I know with me, my whole goal for my character would be to turn into a lich.
Right. Well, yeah, that should be every character's goal, really.
Yeah, because Ghostwalk is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the afterlife that's terrible.
Yeah, well, the whole idea that you're stuck like this.
You just stand there.
Yeah.
For the gods are over there somewhere, and they might care.
Yeah, and...
Even the clerics stand there.
And I think you can get really interesting and do really interesting things in a D&D game, in a fantasy game, with religion and with your deities. If you really want to put the time and the effort into it and make some really cool, make some myths out of it.
Oh, you can make really cool things. And then the characters.
And even if you don't want to do that, just take Greek mythology.
Yeah.
For example, just go lift it out. Boom. Done. And change the names around and you have yourself ready-made myths. And the difference is these actually happened.
Yeah. You know? And I actually love multiple levels of God politics. That maybe that doesn't have anything to do with the players, but might go on in the back of my head because the world is, for some gods, their plaything.
Uh-huh.
For other gods, it's important to them.
Some gods, it's a very sacred thing.
Yeah. Other gods just don't care.
Yeah.
And it also comes down, and it makes the cleric more than just a healing machine. It makes, and also makes other characters who may worship entities.
And even as a player, if your GM isn't heavily into the whole religious thing and you're playing a cleric, have a word with your GM and see if he'd mind if you did a little, you know, worked a little extra and you know, put some spice in the cleric saying, well, I just cast Cure Light Wounds, da da da. You know, what holy book does your character walk around with? What god, you know, you can easily say, well, I worship this god, but okay, you worship this god. Do you worship a certain aspect of this god? Do you have a specific holy book in mind saying, well, he has the book of the seven holy veils or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, and go from there, you know, and when you're talking holy books, you know, I mean, sky's the limit on that. You know, you can have some religions that have one distinct holy, this is our holy book, and, you know, this is what all of our clerics read, and then you have, well, different denominations, like, well, actually, it's this book. Then you have some religions, like, I always thought of, like, the Bokob, for example, god of magic. If he, you know, yes, Bokob, god of magic, wizards probably dig him. He still has clerics, sure, because he's a god. I think it's funny if there's their holy book is like 500 volumes.
Yeah, there's
because
a new
he's a wizard.
Every few years,
yeah,
too.
And they just they don't.
That's
they
how
don't,
they make money.
They don't omit what they
they sell volume. They show up at the door and they knock.
We've got a newest volume of the holy book. And you know, the notion is to say that they don't say what came before is wrong. No, it's all right.
It's all knowledge.
This is all right. This is just more. We're just adding on.
Right.
It's the Encyclopedia Britannica of holy books.
It makes it even, and we're just talking about the normal entities. We haven't even touched with things like Far Realm deities or Cthulhu-esque deities, which you can use.
Right.
Monster deities, just powerful liches.
Because you have to separate, you really have to separate deity and really religion.
Religion is man is
a man.
Well,
is a man.
I was gonna say man-made, but I want to say
it's a mortal.
Really, it's a mortal made.
It's a mortal concept.
Because really, probably most angels don't really have a religion.
Right. I mean, you want to sit and say, does this God actively say, I want people to worship me? Or does God say, people are suddenly worshiping me?
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, you need
go
to...
Go away.
You need to step... Maybe
here, have some God sweat. Now go.
Have some God juice.
Go away.
Maybe clerics really...
That's the wrong...
It could be even gods
levels.
Don't even notice, you know? Yeah.
Maybe clerics... So religion is a mortal thing.
Yeah.
And you also, it can make it very interesting. Maybe clerics started out as parasites.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their rituals are parasites, but the gods are so powerful they don't
notice. It's such a minute thing they don't notice.
They don't care. And then at some point, some deity was like,
hey, I got these people follow. I want more.
I want more.
I
want
to collect
and
them all.
Maybe,
like Pokemon.
Maybe it's not that they get more power, but maybe it's a prestige thing.
Yeah, that's a good. I mean,
maybe it's just cool.
Think of it in those terms of you know, you have gods and
for some,
I always
it's cool.
Like to have gods. If gods are beings in and of themselves, they're off doing their own thing. But the thing is, the things that they do are so cosmic that some deities are focusing on making the universe rotate.
Right.
Hard to do.
This is where I think alignments actually do become important, where they are core, and I think if you have an alignment system, I really think it's important for deities, because a deity is something.
Sure.
They define something.
I would agree with that. You know that alignments do make sense in religious figures, in paladins and clerics and stuff
now,
like that.
Now, a mortal may be, because mortals have free will, and so does deity to a point. But what I'm saying is, a mortal can be unaligned and still be a good person.
Yeah.
But a god of I am goodness and I am law. I believe I want to take care of my people. Maybe it all started out as parasites. But they grew up, and they're kind of cute, and I'm a caring entity.
Yeah, they got better.
They got better, and that other god's minions are attacking. Huh. Well, hey, I know.
Like, jerk.
I'm going to turn one of mine into a cool
machine thing. It's a look at the Iliad, you know, it's stuff like that.
Now, you could also, if you want to have gods fighting, there's different things you can do. You can have gods that die. I personally don't. I want to make that very epic, but you could.
Sure.
There's so many things that you can do. You can have old gods, dying gods. So don't limit yourself. And you're right. Keep the concept of gods. And remember, gods, the word that we're using for gods or deities, I like the word deity better, is do not limit yourself. Because what one group worships, another group may think is just a monster.
Right.
So that Hydra that is 3,000 years old and no one has ever been able to kill could have a large group of followers.
Sure.
And possibly the shamans get magic. Maybe not really from it.
And it could, you know, I mean, when you're talking in a world with Hydras and strange monsters and arcane magic and stuff like that, then why not? You know, why can't you have a big cult that is following this Hydra beast that is running? The Hydra beast itself could not be very sentient, but it's their core belief
it's that faith, that
this thing gives us power, that gives them that power.
And a cleric and or priest or shaman may lose their power because they either lose their faith or, hey, if your god gets killed by a hero, that's kind of a crushing of faith. Now, maybe the power comes from life force.
Sure. A thing to think about, too, is you have these followers of this deity. It's like, oh, well, we believe in this all-powerful thing. And then this dude who's a high level in our – who is a high level – just killed it.
So maybe now you're the god.
I was like, well, no. It's like that. It's try to think of religious orders and religious organizations are going to try to explain that. They're going to say, oh, well, either he didn't have enough faith, or they said he did have faith, but our god – was upset with him, or you know, eventually over time it come that our God is indifferent to these things, and he only believes in strength, and he laughs at death, and you know, when one of his followers dies, he chortles because his spiritual followers are increased. Da 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 da. I mean, they would do something like that in order to explain to the little ones that they should still worship this deity, you know, and still pay their tithings.
If their religion has come along that far, because it could be as simple as,
well, I'd say it's
giant Hydra,
yeah,
tribe worshiping Hydra, heroes come along, murder their god, and now the heroes are being worshipped by this tribe,
like, oh,
who are now, and now they've got a choice to make. They can now they have to protect this tribe who's now sacrificing people to them,
right?
Which isn't really a good thing, but
well, that's just an interesting adventure seed right there. It's this happens, and then these things are worshipping you guys. Entirely out of good. I mean, they think they are 100% doing the right thing.
They're like,
you cast your detect evil, and they're like, no, we believe we're doing the right thing here. It's like, we sacrificed to this thing, and it worked, so we're going to sacrifice you guys.
Dead,
and you're telling us you don't like that.
Well, some of us, you know,
okay,
kill ourselves.
Do you want live slaves? Here are all of our women. And it's like, no, we don't want any of that.
Well,
you know,
do you want us to? What do you want us to do? Now we're confused.
Yeah, exactly.
Spread the religion. Go fight other tribes. Destroy
and then it's,
them.
If you have enough of that saying, well, no, we don't want that, then maybe there's some doubt that is that put into their minds.
And then
saying,
they
try
to kill you.
Yes, like you're obviously false gods. And some clever one might say, well, yes, I am the real god now. Mwahaha.
Or maybe our Hydra god is not actually dead. This is a test.
Yes.
We His have to kill the demons. Form.
Yes. See? You could really have a lot of fun with
but,
it. And really
but don't
work with it.
Don't limit yourself with religion and deities. Anything can really be and don't limit yourself on living entities either. Mm-hmm. Something I think would be really cool and this is taking sci-fi and mixing it with fantasy is a crashed alien a ship with a super AI being worshipped by a tribe of more primitive individuals because what it has is magical.
Quote-unquote magical, right.
Which, remember, you know, at some point, technology of a high enough level is...
Well, yeah, and you could easily do that in space opera.
Oh, God, you could do that in space opera. But
you could do that in a modern day set. I mean, think of a pulp setting, you know. It's like you go to some
little
tribe somewhere.
I kind of think, even though there reaches a point in some... I'm not saying us individually,
sure.
But there reaches a point in society where people are still kind of like, I can't explain that, but I think it is science.
Sure.
So it still kind of depends. So you still have to be kind of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you could even make science, the science whole a religion in and of itself.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know? It's like, and who's to say that if you're talking in a world where the belief in something is enough to make it happen, well, you know, who's to say that this world you go to who is big scientific stuff, well, they believe this science in this science so much that this stuff works.
Well, yeah,
you know?
That's true. And also, if clerical magic and arcane magic works, and therefore there are deities, it makes sense that if there is also science, it's going to have to fit that in.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going to have to fit somehow. Even if the fitting is just something, oh, it just works, that only works so far. Someone's going to want to try to explain it, and that's fine. So don't limit yourself. One thing you have to be careful of, though, is you know, it's perfectly fine to borrow from religions of the real world,
mm-hmm.
Because there's so many cool ones. Good, bad, and other.
Oh, yeah.
Just be careful. Again, talk to your players. Know your players. Make
or
sure
if you're a player, talk to your GM.
Yeah.
I mean, communication is good.
Don't be
communication
offensive.
Communication is key.
Yes.
And really, I don't know. This is a personal thing. I don't like... If you're going to take a religion and put it in a game, unless you're very, very straightforward on the type of game... I don't like real religions in games.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather they be changed, like enough that it's different. Just because it causes some weirdness.
Some weirdness?
It can cause a lot of weirdness. Now, that's just my own personal view.
Real religions in most games, aside from contemporary games, have always caused problems. Because when you have someone who's of one faith conflicting against someone of another faith, and the players in the group, because not everybody follows the same religion,
mm-hmm.
it leads to serious fallout.
Yeah, it can.
And so it's just one of those things that if possible, it's for me at least, it's best avoided.
Well, religion is such complicated, can be such a complicated thing. As if you're working in a universe with a polytheistic society, you know, who's to say that the follower of God A is going to get along with the follower of God B? You know, it's like you have these two characters playing this part. You could do some interesting things with that, or you could just hand wave it. You know, it sort of depends on what you want to do as a GM.
Yeah, it gets really complicated really, really quick.
Yeah, and going into if you're running a modern game without the polytheistic thing, if you're saying like a Call of Cthulhu game where you have these otherworldly wacky things and you have followers of God, of Catholic priests or what have you, Protestant priests, whatever, come out and start, calling down the thunder and whatnot, or even in a Deadlands game, that divine
magic.
Yeah,
but see, Deadlands is different for me.
Sure.
Deadlands, and even Call of Cthulhu, there's just something different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to explain. It's really hard for me to explain it because Deadlands works fine
mm-hmm.
because things are different enough.
Sure.
Like, there are these religions, but there's a whole background
right.
on it.
And well, as with Deadlands, you could do with other things is if you have, say, a blessed in the group that does these things, you need to make it clear that blessed are a rare, rare thing. You're a player character. You're a blessed. You're calling down the thunder. There might be another blessed around somewhere near you, or there might not be one for 300 miles. That's a definite thing to think about when you're talking religion. I think Deadlands handles it great.
Deadlands.
It's that overall fear that keeps people sort of in check.
It also handled it in a fairly, respectful sort of way.
Yeah.
And that's fine. There are different levels.
Well, even in the old version of Deadlands, they actually released Fire and Brimstone, and they actually did some more specific things with different religious groups. Like you could have, with the Protestants, Mormons, Islam, that sort of thing,
right.
and they had different different sort of a few tweaked rules, but it was all sort of basically the same. Because in Deadlands, is if you have a blessed. There's the sinning table. As if you commit a sin, that can affect how your magic works, or if your magic works. And in Fire and Brimstone, the book they put out, they actually had different sinning tables for the different religions. It's like, well, what's a mortal sin to this religion isn't necessarily one to this.
Right.
And that was kind of fun, kind of interesting.
Well, and also. Again, it's kind of hard to explain. You just got to be careful. You got to talk. If someone's uncomfortable, talk to the GM, talk to the players, and everything will be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Don't limit yourself when you're creating your world. I religion really adds. It's like any organization.
And when Jeremy's saying creating your own world, that goes with everything. Even if you're running a modern game, you're creating your own world. You're not just creating your own world. If you're running in a fantasy game, you're running in a science fiction game. No, if you're playing a modern game where you're set in the town where you live and everything is as it is now, even if it's just a regular game, you're still creating your own world.
Yeah.
And embrace that. Don't be afraid to, color things in there. Now,
don't destroy somebody's real beliefs.
Right.
You need to modify.
You definitely need to play to your players and be aware of their beliefs and don't insult people and because you don't want that coming up at the game. You don't want
Jesus fighting zombies.
You don't want Jesus fighting the Greek pantheon.
No,
after being crucified, that would be bad.
You don't want that.
Unless
your group is fine with that. That was a horrible comic and should really never have existed.
Yeah.
Was that really a
Goddessy? Goddessy number one.
Yeah, Goddessy. Yeah. There was only one.
There was a reason.
It was a dream sequence.
But it was still wrong.
Though Jesus did win by not turning the other cheek.
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously.
Yeah, how wrong that is.
I know. He knows Kung Fu.
For those of you not knowing what we're talking about, actually, just do a search online for Atop the Fourth Wall Goddessy, G-O-D-D-Y-S-S-E-Y, I think. And it'll pop up. It's a video you can watch, or he reviews this comic where Jesus is crucified and the Greek gods show up to mock him on the cross, and Jesus hops down and kicks all their butts.
And I gotta say,
yeah, it's wrong.
Zeus and, actually all of them really suck.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. Though the zombies, Jesus and the zombies and turning the whole lake into holy water and then just body slamming zombies into it.
Uh-huh. Oh, are they vampires?
Neither I don't know, but
Jesus,
it was
Jesus Christ vampire hunter, yeah.
Yeah, still horribly offensive, but my God, funny.
How is it spelled? G-O-D?
It's like Odyssey, but with God at the beginning.
Now that we've offended everybody.
Yes.
Just don't limit yourself.
Just do it. You know.
And you're most people that play clerics, if you're throwing in weird stuff and mm-hmm. cool weird stuff, both good, bad, and other, I think they will actually have a lot of fun because it's nice to have whispers of something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you actively are praying and your God wants something done, reading a lot of the Dark Elf, you know, S books, Lolth did this a lot where she'd be like, I want something done, basically. So she would, in prayers, either her or one of her helpers would whisper in their heads, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to actually be the God who's doing it. Maybe it was one of the helpers. Who cares?
Yeah, when you're dealing with real world stuff where it's, you know, Catholic priests and all this stuff, and you know, you're sort of treading on a different type of plane when you're saying, okay, God whispers in your ear to do this sort of thing. But you could still,
do
an interesting, cool story. Just really be careful of not going over the top and not being offensive with it. If you're going to have a character who is worships God and has,
we're talking kind of the modern concept,
concept of God. Be sure at the beginning of the campaign that you're clear to your players as to what your intentions are, and saying, you know, yes, I'm going to. This is a campaign where God exists and God is going to be, you know, this type of thing. I want to make sure that you guys aren't, you know, all upset about this when I do it. So because just make sure, if you have a problem now, you'll want
to
step up.
He's going to turn out to be a platypus.
Exactly. So, yeah. Do we have anything to add before we wrap it up? Before we head out onto the three-parter?
Nothing I can think platypus. Of.
Alrighty, cool. We'll be back after this. And we are back, and today on the three-parter, Jeremy's got a bit of a rant and a review to give us, and Nathan's got a review as well, and I've got a shameless plug. So we're just going to jump right on into it with a review, so hang on. The review.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nathan.
Yeah.
No, wait.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Dr. Whatever. We're going to talk about heart transplants today. No, actually, I'm going to do a review on Lamentations of the Flame Princess, which is a weird fantasy role-playing system. We got the Grindhouse edition from the actual manufacturers, who are located all the way over in Finland. And I'm going to go and talk about it a little bit. I'm going to start off with a general overall synopsis. This is old school, and I don't mean, you know, retro. I mean old school. Take like the original classic Dungeons and Dragons, and that's a pretty good basis for what the system is. It's also hardcore. What I mean by hardcore is print off a lot of character sheets, because when you're starting off with the game at level one, and like the first several levels, you're going to go through a lot of characters. The game is absolutely brutal. That being said, the system is actually kind of interesting. Let me give you the basic premise of the system. The system is essentially, think of it as a, from what it looks to me, is basically somewhere in the range of about 1300 to about 1500 contemporary times. Monsters exist, magic exists, but they're very, very uncommon, so they're very terrifying, kind of like in the Call of Cthulhu aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very neat. A lot of the artwork has a lot of puritanical looks to it, like for the dress and the garb that the people actually wear. And there is science as well as magic, but the setting is very dark. Monsters are uncommon, like I said, so when you encounter them, it's kind of terrifying. Now, that being said, it's not like Call of Cthulhu. There is no sanity system. There's nothing like that. No arbitrary system that affects your character based on, you know, what the GM says. You know, oh, you're frightened. No, that doesn't exist. He explains very succinctly in the referee's guide that he thinks that is a bad system because it forces aspects onto the players without allowing them the option of being that way themselves. The system itself essentially is a lot like the original Dungeons and Dragons, not AD&D, but Dungeons and Dragons. To give you an idea, it's got your standard stats, and I'm going to pull off the character sheets here. The cool thing is this little box actually had the books you need, some sample character sheets, and a little bag of dice.
Mm-hmm.
So they give you everything you need to play.
I would lose the dice.
Yeah, the dice are tiny. I would lose them too.
Robin would
steal the little dice. Though. Either that or my cats would eat
Robin
the dice.
Robin would steal them. You would lose them.
Yeah. But it's got your basic D&D stats, the old D&D stats, charisma, constitution, dexterity, intelligence, strength, wisdom. And it's got the old classic style saving throws, like paralyze, poison, breath weapon, magic device, and magic.
They were pretty easy to figure out.
Yeah. Now, it does make some changes. There's like mm-hmm. base attack bonus, melee attack bonus, range attack bonus. There is no FATCO, thank God, for those of us who have finally expunged that system from our brains. So that's much better done. All that's the skill sad. Checks and stuff are actually done differently. Rather than using percentile dice, mm-hmm. they actually use D6s. So, like, if you're playing what they call a specialist, which would be like a rogue, instead of being like, oh, I need to roll 33% to hide and move silently, like in the old D&D, it's like, well, I have a 2 in 6 chance of sneaking successfully. So you roll a D6, you get a 1 or 2, you succeeded. And it's for their checks and stuff, it's interesting. It's always low. For initiative, it's always high. You roll a D6 for initiative as well. Combat seems to go like any other system. You know, you've got a round, which is 6 seconds. You know, you get one attack.
Sure.
And based on the fact that everybody starts off with a specific set of hit points, everybody starts off with like a D8 hit points at the first level, and then it changes based on the class you're playing. Pretty much means that everybody's on a level playing field starting out, but, you know, you're more fight-oriented people are going to have more hit points moving forward than, say, the wizard is. The rulebook contains the player's rulebook, which is classified as the rules and magic book. It actually contains all the rules the players will need to play. It also is from page 75 on all the way to the end of the book, which is page 100 and, well, pretty much the end of the book. No, actually, it is the all the way down to the credits on page 163 is all spells. Now, like I said, this is like classic old school D&D, which means that your classes are a little bit different. You've got the common classes that everybody knows: cleric, fighter, mage, or magic user, as mm-hmm. they're called. And instead of a thief or rogue, they have a class called a specialist. Those are the main classes. Then you have racial classes, which is, you know, like the old school D&D, where you have dwarf, elf, halfling, and those races actually have their own class. And I'm sure there's a specific reason why they do that. I don't remember why they did that in the original system.
That was just how they did it.
Yeah.
But you could also they state in the book, like, if you want to make a gnome, great, make a gnome. He falls under the halfling class, but, you know, he's still his race is a gnome.
It's a carryover that I never liked, but
yeah,
it works, I guess.
I never understood why they did it that way. I'm sure it helped to simplify things, because basically an elf is a magic user fighter.
Yeah, I know. But I was like, eh.
The system, they have all the rules for tinkering, all the rules for the different skills. There are some different skills. They're called common activities. Combat is fast and brutal. All the charts that you need are in that a player will need is in the rules and magic book. The interesting thing is, in the referee book, you have two rules that it talks about.
Rule 0 and Rule 1. Rule 0. The referee is the final authority in all matters for his campaign above the letter and spirit of the rules. The rules are not the game. The game is what happens on the table. Rule 1. The referee shall realize the Rule 0 is for the purpose of establishing the desired atmosphere for his campaign and not as an excuse to abuse players or a license to be a despot at the game table.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. Those are the two rules. Those are the two rules that they list. There's fundamentals. There's dice and randomness, finding your game. The interesting thing is looking through the book, you know, I read through it. They give you information on the culture. There is a section that gives you a rough outline of different types of monsters and animals, but they don't give you any specifics. They give you a sample monster. The reason for that being is that they actually state in here the system is designed in such a way that, like, the classic system books, like, you know, you can get the classic, like, they actually list some of the books, like Sword and Sorcery.
Right.
Their monsters and stuff are compatible, basically, from what I understand, with being used inside this game system. So that you can actually...
With a little bit of changing, yeah. Most monsters can be easily modded.
Yeah. And so that they've actually cut down on the amount of material that you have to read, and made it to where you can actually take the supplements that you already own and convert them to use. Now, the nice thing about these books is like with the book that Jeremy reviewed, is they have, you know, the charts that you need that have a lot of information that you need right on the backs of the books.
I like that.
And on the back of this one, this gives you the saving throw tables for the different classes.
Mm-hmm.
And the missile weapon types, attack bonuses based on the classes, and then the different types of weapons and armor. So basically, if you're sitting there and you're going, well, I have this, but I don't remember what it is, just grab the book, take a look.
Look at the back.
Hey, there it is. You know, it gives that information to you. One of the things that did surprise me was they talk about maps. This is like old school dungeon crawls. Dungeon crawls will be a big part of this game. Maps are a classic prop in gaming, but it says right here, as players move through the adventure environment, the environment should be communicated verbally. Maps should never be shown to players, and one or more players will have to learn to interpret the referee's description and make their own maps. So in other words, you make the map for the layout of what you want to run. Mm-hmm. The players are obligated to map the dungeon out themselves as they're moving. So they know where they're at. For the event that they have to beat a hasty retreat, they know where they're going. If you get separated from the person with the map, bad things can happen. Like I said before, this game is really, really brutal. And all it takes is reading the sample gameplay and the tutorial book to realize how absolutely brutal it is. And it points out to me that there's a guy in there that's a lot like how I am when I'm gaming. And I realize reading it, that I don't want to be like that guy because he's an absolute smurfing smurf hole. Yeah, terrible. And the GM is a GM I would never, ever, ever, ever game under. By the end of the sample game, he's killed all four of the players and their retainers off. With glee, I might add, cackling as he goes. He starts off okay, but as he gets further in, he suddenly decides, I want to rip these players apart. And these people are like third and fourth level. You know, they've worked a while
to
get
to
where they're
at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the GM's like, it's time for them to die. It's like, it reminds me of someone else I've run under before. We completed the mission. We saved the person. We
made
it back out.
Time for them to die.
And then what's our reward for saving them?
Gassed.
Oh, we get locked in a room and gassed.
Yay.
Yeah, thanks. Great.
See ya.
Now on to the layout of the books. The books are laid out in a very standard fashion.
At least if we were gassed with paralyzing stuff, and then it could go into the next game.
Yeah.
But no.
No. I think we're done talking about that because I don't want to start ranting. The books are laid out in a very standard fashion. They're easy to identify where things are at. They've all got table of contents, so you can quickly identify what you're looking for and find the page that's on. They do use for the large titling for sections in the first letters. They use Old English style lettering, so the S's look like F's, which can be a little confusing if you've never seen that form of writing before.
Right.
It looks like what you would see for a handwritten book from the 1400s.
The artwork can be very, very graphic. It's
very much for adults.
Yeah, it's very much for adults. There's nudity throughout the books.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there's nudity on the front, I think.
Yeah, there is nudity on the front of the box, too. It's absolutely not for children. My guess is when we see this on the shelves at the stores, they'll have like a plastic wrap and a sticker over the front of the box.
I think they should have like a little
little fake bikini. Like what they do when you watch movies on TV and they've been edited for TV and they paint the bra on.
Yeah. Yes.
The artwork can be very explicit.
We're perfectly cool with that. I got naked chicks on all of them.
Yeah, it does not faze me. The artwork serves its purpose in the book. There's a lot of artwork that's designed and drawn in ways like, again, what you'd see in books written in the 1400s. Very stylized, iconic. Then there's other artwork which is just kind of hit and miss. It's not that the artwork is bad. It's just a question of how the artwork fits with the actual system.
Oh.
It's all well drawn. All of it is. It's just that you look at the picture and you go, well, that's an awesome picture. How does that fit with the game again? I have no idea. But it's an awesome picture. The system is – anybody who's played D&D will be able to pick up the system with a little bit of work, will be fine, be perfectly fine. They will not have a problem.
Are the spells – I mean, can a player stand up and win basically, or is it just that the GM – has to be vicious, or is the game built to kill players?
Well, considering the low amount of hit points that the average player gets, the system is slanted more towards players being on the losing end of combat because, you know, it's kind of realistic. I mean, you take a sword to the gut,
right?
You're going to die.
But is it actively trying to kill them in the sense that it's just difficult, or is it...
I wouldn't say that it's actively trying to kill them. I mean,
it's more gritty.
It's slanted in the way that the system is very, very dark, very realistic when it comes to the amount of damage that someone can take.
Okay.
What will really kill the players is a GM that is completely unrelenting and unforgiving.
But a group that sticks together and
That's what ended up happening in the little walkthrough, the sample adventure. Was the party freaked out because they woke up a demon because they were idiots and they weren't paying attention to what they were doing. They woke up a demon and then the party booked and split, leaving the one guy who was the idiot who thought that, you know, I've played this game before. I know what we're going to need. So he over-encumbered himself to the point where he was moving at like 30 feet a minute. Got left behind to fight the demon and then did the stupid thing of dropping a torch on the ground, which of course causes the torch to go out. So now he's fighting with a demon
in the dark. Demon's like, oh, this is even better. Yeah.
So, of course, he got slaughtered. Well, the rest of the party broke apart and fled down various different tunnels. Did not state where they were going. They didn't say, we're fleeing back the way we came. And so they all got lost. And the person with the map went, you know, down here and got eaten by monkey things. And then it
sounds like it's just gritty.
It's a very
also, you know, point out the obvious connection. It is a Grindhouse edition. Not saying that, you know, just this edition is the only one, but I'm saying obviously this guy takes some
Officially it's not like the player's spell. Okay, if you have a magic user, his spells aren't built to be weak.
The spells in here are pretty impressive. The level 3 mage in the sample adventure casts sleep. And the rules for sleep does not state how sleep is cast. So what they did was they cast it centered on themselves, and it affected everything within 25 feet, right? Well, they were allowed, you know, the spells are allowed for you to select the targets you affect up to a specific number of hit dice. She's level 3, and she was affecting 11 hit dice worth of monsters.
That's
pretty impressive.
That is pretty cool. Because
that's actually fairly stronger
than most D&D mages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the spells are not weak. The spells are not designed in such a way to limit the mage.
The tools.
Yeah, it's just how you
use
just, them.
It looks like they're really going for a gritty atmosphere.
Yeah, one of the other things they talk about is there'll be situations. They're certain there'll be situations where you have to choose whether you maintain an image with the townsfolk or whether you actually complete something that might be unenviable to the townsfolk. I mean, there's going to be situations where it's like you may slay the monster and save the day, but because you slayed the monster who was, you know, that was the town's best person, you know, best guy for the job.
Because that monster protected the town in its own way from another group of monsters. You kill the monster, you move on, the town gets eaten, you know.
Yeah. And it comes back to bite you in the butt. Yeah.
No, that's fair. That's good.
It's layered. What's really gonna hinder players with the game is going to be GMs that are specifically out to get their players. This system will allow GMs who are out to get their players a really big chance to really
stick it to their players. But didn't that GMs in break rule zero or rule number one?
What?
The one in the story?
No, he did not use any of the rules. He did not break any of the rules. If you read what the GM does, everything he does, he had already laid out. All that happened was is the players fell into what they didn't do. They didn't pay attention.
Well,
and when you're in a system like this, it's like Call of Cthulhu.
Pay attention.
The major thing in Call of Cthulhu that people don't understand, since it's an investigation game, you have to pay attention. If you don't pay attention, you'll do something wrong, and you might unleash Cthulhu, who will eat the whole party and destroy the world. It's the same principle.
Well,
and they didn't pay attention. And since they didn't pay attention, it ended up wiping the. It was a total party kill.
But it doesn't sound like that. The character classes are necessarily weakened per se.
No. They're on the basis of the information provided and the rule book. Everybody starts off with a specific set. Looks like I was wrong. It's not D8. It looks like everybody starts their first level with a D6 hit points plus a Constitution modifier. Now this is old school, which means that an 18 only gives you a +3. Not a +4. So the most you can have at level 1 is going to be 9 hit points for any class. And they all start with a D6, but based on what class you play after that, like playing a cleric, you get a D6 every level. You play a fighter, you get a D8 every level after that, up until a certain point, and then you start getting, like with the old D&D, you know, you start just getting a number of hit points.
After a while, when you reach name level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We normally level 9.
Level 10.
Just flipping through the books, what I notice is there's no monster manual.
No, there is a section with samples of how monsters are supposed to be, how you can make up monsters. But it specifically says in the referee book, the system is designed in such a way that you can take classic adventures and classic role-playing game books, and with a little bit of work, you can convert the monsters from there, or you can make up your own. And what they say is if you're taking monsters from another system, say you're taking goblins. It's a very traditional monster, right? Well, say warp it. Make it a little weird. This is a weird rule, a weird fantasy setting. So make it so where it's not something that they're gonna immediately recognize. You know, it's gonna disturb the players.
Right.
Monsters are supposed to be terrifying. You know, do it. I mean, it's it also says in the rule book or in the referee book, being the referee for the game is not necessarily going to be an enviable task. There's a lot of work involved.
Yeah.
And he points it out, and that's something I have never seen written in any of the other GM manuals I've ever read. They always talk about how being the GM is great because you get to do this and that and the other thing. Being a GM it can be a pain in the ass. There's a lot of work in it, and they point that out very, very quickly in this book. And in that respect,
so,
I think it's really
so. Would you recommend it?
If you like the idea of a weird fantasy setting and you want gritty, or you have a GM that's willing to modify the system to make it work a little bit lighter.
I like the 1600 idea.
Yeah, isn't that just a cool idea? It's like the Savage World of Solomon Kane.
What's your favorite spell in that?
Oh, the ones I looked at? Head.
Yeah.
What's it called? I'm going to have to look it up.
I
would recommend this to people that like this style of game.
Sure. I'm looking on looking at price. It is. You can get it as a PDF from RPG Now for $17.75.
I thought it was a little pricey when it.
And you can get the box set itself on the Lamentations of the Flame Princess website is $50. It's in euros, but it's essentially $50. But it's a print PDF bundle,
which means you immediately get both.
For this, I will mention now is if you go and listen to my interview with the Lamentations of the Flame Princess guys, we do mention a coupon code in there, which you can go use on the Lamentations of the Flame Princess website store to get a 20% off your purchase once per customer, obviously. So you could get this for 20% off.
You're all
about
the coupons tonight.
Yeah. Hey, we can if people if
they
if we
they can, gave us a coupon to give out, so
not only that,
I'm letting them know. But they have
like,
to go listen to the interview to get it. So.
That actually one of the spells that I really thought was cool was a 4th level magic user spell called Hallucinatory Terrain, because you can make it look like it's just
that's one of the old school. Yeah, that's one of the old school ones.
Yeah, most of the spells are old school. Let me read off some of the spell list. Start off with magic users here, or cleric. Here's cleric spells. Of course, you got Bless, Command, Cure Light Wounds, Detect Evil, Invisibility, Undead, Protection from Evil, Purify Food and Drink, Remove Fear, Sanctuary, and Turn Undead. All very common spells. You get a little bit farther down.
Oh, they made Turn Undead a spell.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, you actually cast it like a spell. Then you get things like, where is it? Enthrall at level 2, which is just, yeah. Is here. In command. Of course, they have Cloud Kill for all the people that love Cloud Kill.
I love Cloud Kill.
Because that spell kind of disappeared, didn't it? In later
oh, God, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Cloud Kill no, it was so vicious. Freaking dangerous.
Yeah, because it affects everybody.
Your party.
Yeah. Oops.
It was a great, though, mass combat spell.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, oh, this mage, I can stab him to death. Oh, wait, he's like level 6 now, so now he's wearing stone skin, so I can't hurt him yet. Oh, wait, he's level 8. He just killed me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really how it goes. It was like, oh, look, a squishy mage. Ha, ha, ha. Level 2. Ha, ha, look, a squishy mage. Level 3. Ha, ha, a squishy mage. Yeah. Level 5. He has fireball. Run!
Yeah. And Thrall.
And at that point, the mage is like, this is for all the stabbing, you little bastard.
Yeah. And really, at level 10, it starts to get really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, at level 10, he's like, I control the universe.
Well, I mean, once you get stone skin, the old school stone skin, you could wade into combat and be like, blade barrier.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. A level 7 cleric spell is part water.
Yeah.
As in parting the Red Sea, like Moses.
So it's pretty gritty.
And there's there's 9 levels of spells. Of course, power word kill, time stop, temporal stasis.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting one, though. Imprisonment.
Yeah.
Remember, like, Soulfire Tomb?
I remember Imprisonment, yeah.
Well, Imprisonment was a great... Those are great spells.
Here's one that Jeremy's used on me several times. Reverse Gravity.
I love Reverse Gravity.
But yeah, basically...
No, the first time I ever used that, it pointed out that there really wasn't any distance.
Yeah, so you like launch me into the sky.
They're outside.
Yeah, so you reverse gravity, and I fell into the sky for like 5 minutes or something, and passed out.
That kind of sucks. Yeah. Oh, spells went off.
And then I started to fall. But this is like the best way I can put it. Looking through the spells is like Phantasmal Psychedelia that hasn't been around forever. This is a greatest hits list of spells.
Oh yeah. Well, that's cool. Overall recommendation.
I recommend it.
It's good.
If you like this type of idea of the system, a gritty system set in a very interesting time period style of
it's the time period that I like.
Yeah, cool. It's very cool. It is pricey. But I think honestly, if this is your type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
$50 is good. And if you can save 20%?
20%, yeah.
20%, that'll save you $10.
If you're already a gamer, old school gamer, you probably have a bunch of the other books.
Oh, yeah.
And you
all the old school D&D
books.
That's
the same with Sword and Wizardry, though.
Yeah. They
would work with all.
That's one of the things they label in the book is Swords and Sorcery. They're
Swords
they're,
and Wizardry.
Sword and Wizardry is a
Swords and Wizardry. Yeah.
Okay,
but Sword and Sorcery is another set that's divine too.
They cool. said that the monster books for those will have monsters that you can easily convert into the system. I think it's well laid out. I think their idea, their premise behind it is a good premise. I think people will have fun with it. As long as they have the right GM.
As long as the GM's not insane.
Yeah, as long as the GM is not a douche.
The rant.
All right. I've got a rant. So, lately my phone, which is a touchscreen Samsung phone, the screen has started to randomly turn off. Just midstream, it'll just go black. Now, it still is on. I know it's still working. It makes that nice little noise that they make. But
that little
sound. It just goes off. So, I need to have a phone. I was like, okay. Now, a couple things. I recently, like an idiot, canceled the insurance on it. There was a reason for it. It's because it costs the same as the texting that I used. So, okay, kicking myself. That was kind of stupid. I understand. Now, keep in mind, this phone is only a year and a half old. Okay? Now, I tried taking the battery out. I did all that. I did AT&T's chat, and the chat person was very nice, very polite, and told me how to reset the phone properly. So I did that. And that worked for a little while. Unfortunately, that was not the main issue. Now, I'm pretty sure what the issue is there's a software upgrade that just is stuck in there. And nothing I do will get it going. So they said I should go to the site, to the Samsung site, and make sure that it's all registered. That's fine. I tried that. Every serial code and every number I used on the Samsung site didn't work. I followed the directions. None of them worked. I remember that's why I never registered in the first time, because I couldn't find any of the stinking numbers that they asked for. This time they actually point to the numbers. None of them work. So I'm like, okay, that's frustrating. But you know what? On the top of my phone, it says AT&T. Yes, it's Samsung, but it's an AT&T phone. Now, I've been with AT&T since 2003. Long stinking time. So I go down to the AT&T store, and I talk to a very nice individual who, unfortunately, when basically she says, well, there's not much I can do. And when I respond with, so basically I'm paying for a service and I'm not going to have a phone, so I'm paying for something that I can't use, the individual responded, well, yeah, pretty much. Now, that was not the right comment to use, not very good customer service. The person did backtrack, not mad at them, it's all good. They gave me some options, and they did point out, hey, you know, I know these aren't very good options. You know, you could upgrade early. It's going to be like $60-$80 more. And I'm like, I really can't afford that. Plus the cost of upgrading the phone itself.
Oh, and they want you to renew your contract as
well. They're going to want me to renew my contract. Mm-hmm. And I have an upgrade coming up in October. So it'd be an early upgrade.
Which means that you'd take a penalty.
I could buy this little cheap, you know, $15, $10 phone. It's not going to have any of the chat stuff, nothing. Now, I'm not asking for I wasn't going to buy a touchscreen replacement one. That was still too pricey. So, my next step was talk to the manager. And I mean, the individual at the store said, hey, well, you know, you can talk to the manager. I said, I would like to speak to the manager. And, the manager was out at lunch, which is fine. And I was given their card. And so I went home, and I made a call, and the manager picked up. I explained my problem, that I have this phone. This phone is only a year and a half old. I've been with their company since 2003.
Since they were Singular.
Since they were Singular.
Mm-hmm.
I've paid the bill.
Yeah.
Obviously. I've signed multiple contracts with them. Once my contract was coming up, I was thinking of trying to go into one of their nifty little iPhone things. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that it does not have the insurance on it. I'm not asking for a new phone. I want this phone to work. I would like you to work with me. I think that's very clear. I think that's fair. Like, well, manager indicated, you know, well, you don't have any insurance. It's more than a year old. Like, I understand that. He said, AT&T is not in the business of giving out phones. And I about jumped through that phone. I kept my cool because actually, yes, they are. They give out free phones all the time. That's what happens when you sign a contract. They hand out millions of phones. I don't know. And then his next concern was why one of his employees would give some random customer his card. And he was concerned about this. And I was very confused because the point was, well, no, your employee did nothing wrong. Your employee did their job and was perfectly nice, and this is beyond what they can do. So there's nothing we can do. And the individual said, well, we don't have any technicians here anyway. I think there's some sort of repair shop up in Kansas City. I've heard good things about them. You could probably take it up there. But pretty much you're going to have to buy a new phone. I was like, huh, really? Okay. Well, I'm sorry we couldn't, you know, come to any sort of agreement. Oh, yeah. And that was our conversation. Now, there was no screaming. There was no yelling.
No, you're not me. You don't yell at them.
There's no point in yelling at this point. But two things that really concerned me. One, he was more concerned that his employee had put a concerned customer, who they could not help, by the way, in contact with the manager of the store, who actually does have some power. Maybe not necessarily what I was thinking, but they do have some power. They're managers of the store. Second, the comment of AT&T is not in the business of giving out phones was a poor choice of words and is not what a customer who has a broken phone, yes, part of it is because of, well, my stupidity on canceling the insurance, which I will admit, very badly timed, but the phone is only a year and a half old. And guess what? It is an AT&T phone. Is it a Samsung? Yes, but you guys are partners. And you are the ones I got the phone from, through your website. I did not buy this phone on the side. I did not buy this phone from some other place. I bought it through your website. Therefore, it is yours to fix. There is no loyalty, obviously, for the customer. There was nothing done to assist the customer in this case. Basically, in a very polite way, they told me to smurf off. Obviously, minus the smurf part, and put in some other words, or a word. I am not amused. I am not amused at all. I know I'm just one customer and my, you know, measly whatever I spend is just a small drop in the giant AT&T bucket. But I'm pissed off. I'm really pissed off. I did go ahead and buy a phone from eBay. Nice little, guess what? A Samsung phone. I didn't have any issues with buying a Samsung phone. Different one. Cost me almost nothing. I mean, it's a fine phone. It does what it's supposed to. But once my contract is up, I am done with AT&T. Since they obviously don't care about their customers, and they are not in the business of giving out phones, which was not really what I asked for anyway. I just asked for them to fix my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But since they're not in the business of giving out phones, and since they never, ever give out phones for free, ever, 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 I don't even know what else to say. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
I think the best thing you can say is I'm taking my business elsewhere, and I'm making sure that everybody knows how horrible you treated me. And I'm going to let the Better Business Bureau know exactly how horrible
I'm with AT&T,
me.
And I just checked my contract end date. So, yeah. As of my end date, I'll probably switch to someone else.
Well, the thing is, if you want to stay with your iPhone, you can now switch to Verizon. Verizon has them as well. And
so
I've had Verizon for dear God, 6-7 years now, and my
contract ends in 13 months. If they treated you like that, I in 13 months I'm gonna switch over to Verizon. Then,
what is it really unreasonable for them to not at least have tried to work out something?
Yeah, they did not try to work something out. It sounded like that manager was just a jerk.
He didn't care. I mean, his priorities were completely wrong. CSR person.
It sounded like
he can't help.
It sounded like he really tried to help you, and you know, he did what he was supposed to do.
And if they got in trouble, I'm pissed then even more.
Yeah, he handed you off to a manager.
They did what they were supposed to.
That's crap.
So, whatever. I know AT&T doesn't care. They're a big evil corporation.
When your contract is up, you can go over. You can go to someone else. You can port your number over.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what they want for customer loyalty. I've been mad at them before.
Yeah.
But now I'm fed up.
Everybody's been mad with their cellular phone service at some point.
It doesn't matter the cellular service you have. You've been mad at them.
Mad at them because something's gone wrong, and then you weren't able to get it fixed in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, when I started having problems with my BlackBerry, because I had a BlackBerry Storm, really, really liked that phone. Well, it started having problems, so I went in to get it repaired. Well, I had to replace it. They sent me a replacement overnight, popped the defective one in the box, shipped it off. That one died in like 3 months. They shipped it back. They didn't carry BlackBerry Storm 1s anymore at that point. There was all BlackBerry Storms 2. I went through three of those before I finally got one that lasted until my contract was up so I could renew. And when I renewed, I bought a Droid. Don't get me wrong. I like BlackBerries. BlackBerries are very good for professional contacts, which was what I was specifically using it for. But my service, the quality of phone for the BlackBerry, and it's not even Verizon's fault. My warranty on my BlackBerry was 12 months. And at 18 months, I was still replacing my phone because it didn't work. And they were just doing it.
Well, it's.
I mean, that's what they should have done. They should have just said, okay, well, here's the thing. There will be a minor fee because your phone's out of warranty. We'll send you a replacement. Just put your defective phone in the box, pull out your cards, send it back.
Nothing.
That should have been exactly what they did.
They didn't do that. Instead, tried to just have me go to the Samsung site. I already tried.
Yeah,
the numbers
Samsung.
That I was putting in.
And
don't work.
That's because the phone is no longer being manufactured. Therefore, Samsung doesn't have any information on it.
And really, the initial place where I got it was AT&T. Therefore, for me, for the consumer,
when you have a problem,
should
you
go
back
to
where
it
you
is,
got it
and
from.
And that's clear in the Consumer Protection Act. They are in the chain of the consumer purchasing the item.
And it
they are
says,
responsible. Right?
I don't even – really when it comes down to it, I'm not blaming Samsung because
electronics fail.
Electronics fail. That's not the point. The point was how I was treated, how they acted, and where his priorities was.
Mm-hmm.
His priorities
were
not
on making.
He was
more concerned with chastising a customer service representative for following
and
the
actual
proper. And
that AT&T doesn't give out phones. They give out free sticking phones all the time. They could have fixed it, and I probably would have gone up and spent more money when my contract was up with them. But now. They're not getting any money.
Nope, you're switching
service. Once I'm done, I mean, I will continue paying my, you know, until the end. Because
You don't want to hurt your credit rating or anything by
And no, we I have can't. A podcast. We can voice our, we have our soapbox. And it is
so
our podcast,
that's my, that's my, rant.
Alrighty.
I am irritated.
Well then, 13 months from now, I'll be switching to someone else.
No.
Yeah.
The Shameless Plug.
All right, we are back, and I've got a little shameless plug to give out, as I am prone to do. A while back, I put out the Justice City PDF on RPG Now, and it's my the super-powered Justice City source book. I've now released a PDF add-on for that, for the Justice City Irregulars, tying in, obviously, to the Justice City United actual play podcast that we're putting out. Justice City Irregulars PDF contains the four characters, or the four first starting characters, I should say, of the Justice City Irregulars. It's got Cerberus, it's got Blue Streak, it's got Eclipse, and it's got Crimson Bolt in there.
And it's on RPG Now. It's $1.50. Gets you 4 solid characters you can use. It's got some little snippet of information on magic in the Superpowered universe, as well as a little bit of background info on Crimson Bolt's past. So it's $1.50. You know, I wrote it, so hey, go check it out. Also, what I'm also wanting to plug is the Justice City and Justice City Irregulars add-on is now also available as one book as a print-on-demand through Lulu. Just go to lulu.com and do a search for Justice City. It'll pop up. It's $12.99. It's about a 42-43 page black and white with color cover, and it's got a lot of good stuff in it. So if you are interested in getting that stuff, if you are interested in supporting the Gamers Haven a bit, head on over to Lulu, pick up the print copy, or head over to the RPG Now through our affiliate link and pick up some Justice City stuff. You can get the add-on for $1.50, and the core book is about $4, or $3, excuse me. So, cheap stuff. Enjoy it. That's all I got. We are back, and we've got some random encounters to go over today. Go us. We are awesome. First of all, let me get the emails up here. We've got a couple new pins on the guest map. Of course, I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but Sanjian Unkara, our resident Indiana Jones villain. Crept out of his Temple of Doom, and to get himself, a wireless signal, and put a pin on his map. Or I'm assuming this isn't exactly where his secret lair is, or maybe he was on vacation.
Is he slowly moving towards us?
No, that'd be creepy. But that'd be awesome. We seem to have quite the presence in the Justice City region. Because Sanjian is in Vancouver. He's in Justice City. That puts about 3 or 4 people in that general vicinity. So that's of who are listeners cool. to the show. We got Sanjian's map, his pin on there. We also got Adriona also put a pin on the map, and they are located, as soon as it loads up, Adriona is out in, of all places, the somewhat the Justice City area. Looks like they are near Spokane, Washington. Looks like they're on the just across the border in Idaho. Not too far from somebody else. So got some good people in there. Throwing out some shout outs. I think we had one more. It was Daltris, also put a pin on the map. And Daltris is located out in, soon as it decides to load.
We've been having network
problems. And Daltris looks to be located just outside of Houston. So we got Daltris down in Texas. So I want to say hi to all of the new members on the Minion map. If you go to the Gamers Haven website, gamershavenpodcast.com, you will find up at the top, one of the links up there is the Minion map. So click on that and put your little figure on there. You can have Darth Vader, you can have a Stormtrooper, you can have Tarzan, you can have Spider-Man, you can have lots of stuff like that. So
cool, I need to put myself on the map.
I know. Well, we are awesome that way. Got an email, let's see, from, of course, I believe this is from double check here. The Eighth Pagan. Yes, got an email from the Eighth Pagan. Said who actually sent us he mentioned the Red Dwarf RPG. He said, no, you can't have them.
but he sent us a picture to tantalize you with of the Red Dwarf RPG. There you go, Nathan. Red Dwarf RPG stuff.
You lucky bastard.
You lucky bastard. Let's see.
I think that was out here for like all of like a year, and then it just vanished.
But good old 8th Pagan, you sent us that. Said, no, you can't borrow the Red Dwarf books. Not played it, but the books are entertaining if you like the BBC series. As I understand it, the US TV series was terrible.
What US TV series? It doesn't exist.
Exactly.
BBC only.
The Mutants and Masterminds GM screen is very useful, but not used to the quick character generator, as I converted Mutants and Masterminds 2E to 3E with established characters. He hasn't used the quick character generator. He pre-ordered the Dragon Age RPG set 2 and paid the £3 sterling something for the PDF. Looking forward to the arrival of the box set. Although I did enjoy Dragon Age 2 on the console, it felt like only half the story to me, as it ended just after you became champion of Kirkwall. Not sure whether that will continue in the DLC, Dragon Age 3, or something like Awakenings. One final thought. Scrying uses reflective surfaces, and the human eye is reflective, ...
So, creepy.
That is kind of creepy. I think the 8th Pagan has been gouging up people's eyes and been using them to scry on us again, so... he may be watching us as we speak.
With a bunch of human eyes.
With a bunch of human, yeah. And speaking of human eyes, Sanji Anunkara, another, you know, we've had a plethora of villains now.
Another so. Collector of body parts?
I don't know. He said, so tried to add my pin to your minion map, and you, yeah, all that. Have to say, sorry to Nathan, just like with his, quote, Age of Boobs review.
Age of Boobs.
Age of Conan. Age of Boobs. I was laughing through his Dragon Age 2 review. I don't know why he had so much trouble with the game. I found them a challenge, but not nearly as hard as he seems to. I do understand his complaint of the chest. Okay, it's not. It's D2. I think he's talking Diablo 2. Diablo 2, yes. I do understand the complaint of the chest storage issues, and all I have to say about this is go play Minecraft.
No, I don't have any problems with the current version of Diablo 2. It's been watered down so much it's easy as hell now, but when I first started playing it, it was much more difficult.
Yeah.
I was pining to the days when the game would actually kill you relentlessly.
Mm-hmm. And as for the Red Dwarf RPG, it is my understanding that part of the reason it is hard to come by is that the writers worked with a gamer's mentality more than a business one. They wrote the three products they wanted to and said that was it, and they were done. If you are interested, I can try and do a short review of it for you.
Please.
Sanjian, if you can find the time to come out of your Temple of Doom, we would love to have a review of that for you, from you. That would be fantastic.
I'd love to play it, but...
If it's just a text review, I will post it on the website. If it is an audio review, we will not only post it on the website, but we'll put it out in the feed, maybe even feature it in one of the shows. So,
hell yeah.
We'd love to. That really goes with any of our listeners. If you guys got stuff you want to talk about, just let me know, and we'll see what we can work out with you guys. Sanjian also sent us an email. Sanjian was very talkative this time.
I guess.
Cool. Talking to me about Mutants and Masterminds issue number 6, third edition Justice City issue number 6 that we put out. I haven't finished listening to yet, but still a bit more to go. However, this soundbite was brought to mind while listening to the latest show. I was also wondering what was the name of the names book you used, the one written for gamers by gamers. I wouldn't mind trying a copy for myself. I'll play the soundbite here shortly, and you wonderful listeners will hear it here as well in a minute. But as far as the names books, I think the names books that I pretty much use, there is a book available. It's a print on demand through Lulu called the Story Games Names Project. I think it's about $12. Good little book. Has lots of different names. And there's also just became available. I had the hard copy of this, and it just became available through RPG Now. And it's called the Everyone Everywhere List, and it's got different nationalities and stuff like that. And a great little PDF. Check it out. Get it through our affiliate program. I'm going to go ahead and play this soundbite now.
I love you. You love me. We're a happy family.
Shut the
Well, that was an interesting soundbite. Yes, I personally remember the one back from Wolfenstein days, where it's that "I love you, you love me" goes on, and then it's "Guten Tag" and the whole machine gun sound. So yeah,
it was the end boss of the first mission.
Guten Tag.
Did you ever play
Spear of Destiny?
You know, kill Barney Doom.
Yes, I believe so. There are so many mods for Doom out there. Mm-hmm. They're all awesome. Thank you for that, Tanjian. I'm thinking Tanjian was maybe away from his Temple of Doom for a while and went on vacation, you know, in around Justice City. Maybe he's thinking of conquering it one day.
Well, if he needs to rename it to Justice City for us.
Well, yeah, obviously. That sort of obviously goes without saying.
It goes without saying.
Let's see. That is it. That is all I've got for emails from our lovely fans. And actually, yes, it seems we got a new guest on the map. It's someone named Mythos Nate. I don't know who the heck that is. So he's probably up in Siberia or something, you know.
He wishes.
Well, that's all she wrote. That is our episode on religion in your game. I thought it was a really good discussion.
Off-topic thing. Been watching a show lately. I highly recommend that people that like British British comedy,
mm-hmm.
like situational comedy, check it out. It's called Waiting for God. Nothing like what the name mm-hmm. states.
I've heard of it.
It's funny as hell. The two main characters, one of the characters' names is Diana Trent, and the other one's name is Tom Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two old aging people mm-hmm. living in a rest home in England.
Right.
And they get up to a surprising amount of hijinks. It lasted for about 5 seasons, but you can watch the first 2 seasons on YouTube because they don't have it on Netflix. And they have seasons 3 and 4 on Netflix, and then season 5 is on YouTube. I highly recommend checking them out. They're about 30 minutes apiece, and if you don't laugh, you must be a very, very sad person,
because
mm-hmm. they're funny.
I'm 6 episodes into Game of Thrones, the HBO series, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
So
I've been recording it. I still need to see it.
I have them.
Yeah. Once they're all done, I'll loan them to you.
They are incredible. Awesome. I've been watching the new Doctor Who. And this is the new season.
I haven't finished season 5 yet, so
the new season's really good.
That's what I hear. Looking forward to watching it. We're planning on catching up with it this week, actually, because now my sister's down visiting. She hasn't seen the season. She hasn't seen season 5. Beth hasn't seen season 5, so we're gonna do it all at once.
I can't believe I saw season 5 before you did.
I've been waiting on other people, really.
Yeah.
I would have been viewing it. Beefily.
Yeah, you watched it a long time ago.
That's all she wrote, unless you guys got anything else to add?
No, all but right. I can say this. Gamer's Haven is the fastest car in the world.
And on that bombshell...
That's the end of the
show. That's the end of the show.
Good night, everybody.
Been listening to the Gamers Haven podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll free 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States License, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
That's not canon.